know about the structure and change within those systems over time. This is work, kind of a continuation of work that that we presented last year, funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, really designed to help us get a better handle on what public health delivery systems look like in the U.S. and what we can learn about how best to organize them. One of the problems that we often face in doing research on public health is that you know, people say, well, you've seen one health department in the U.S. There's so much variation in how they're organized and how they function, how they interact with other organizations. And so this work is really designed to help us come up with an empirical way of classifying and comparing local public health delivery systems in more of an apples-to-apples framework, classifying them into more homogenous groups so we can begin to make sense of how they operate, how they change over time, and what the implications might be for people. I want to recognize my colleagues at Arkansas and also University of Kentucky who collaborated with us on this. I have no relationships to disclose, but do want to acknowledge our funders at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. So the objective of this work is to use an empirical typology of local public health delivery systems, a way of classifying local public health delivery systems based on their organizational structure, to compare and to assess change over time in how these delivery systems are organized. Secondly, to look at what some of the drivers of that change in organizational structure may be, both the economic and institutional drivers and correlates of change. And then thirdly, look at some of the associations between structural change and change in performance and outcomes. Earlier today, we presented some work looking at changes in health outcomes and preventable mortality measures associated with these structural changes. And today, I'll be focusing more on some of the institutional and economic drivers of this organizational trend change. We use the Institute of Medicine's kind of definition of public health delivery system, which is really thinking about the full complement of organizations that participate in performing essential public health services for defined populations. Certainly governmental agencies, our state and local public health agencies are at the core of those systems, but those agencies work in tandem with many other public and private organizations to deliver services. And so we use that broad perspective of a delivery system, including multiple public and private organizations. Why is organizational structure important? Why are we focusing on trying to find better ways of measuring and classifying systems based on their organizational structure? We know that interorganizational relationships are likely to be very important to public health, the quality and effectiveness of public health service delivery. Other organizations that our governmental health agencies work with can play important roles in complementing and extending the work of governmental public health agencies, extending their reach, helping them to reach vulnerable and underserved populations, bringing new resources and expertise to the table. All of this can have beneficial effects on quality, potentially on efficiency, and also help us by extending the reach into vulnerable populations can help us potentially reduce health disparities. At the same time, achieving effective interorganizational relationships are not always automatic, and there can be certainly can be problems in any delivery systems that rely on multiple organizations interacting and working together. There can be lack of clarity and accountability about responsibilities, as Jack alluded to in the disaster preparedness and response area, but also in routine public health delivery, these issues can come up that can cause gaps in coordination or gaps in how organizations work together. There can be, at the extreme end, duplication or competition or even rivalry among agencies that potentially are competing for the same resources within a community or a state. And there may be instability in the contributions of different organizations to the delivery system over time, resulting in inconsistent service or potentially inefficiency or even waste. So an effective organizational structure and interorganizational relationships obviously are not automatic when it comes to public health delivery systems. When studying the structure, the organizational structure of public health delivery systems, we've relied on a larger base of organizational theory and some concepts that have been used for studying other types of interorganizational service delivery systems, including medical care and other social service systems. And that literature and theory and prior empirical work has really focused on three major dimensions of the system. The first being what we call diversification, which is basically the scope of activities that are performed by the system as a whole. The second being what we term integration, which is the range of organizations that contribute to the performance of that system, both the diversity and types of organizations that are involved, and how that's our the construct of integration. Thirdly, is this concept of centralization, which is the role that a single organization plays. In our case, in the public health systems case, the role that the governmental public health agency plays in that system. How concentrated or diffuse are public health efforts within the governmental public health agency of a public health delivery system? So that's our third major construct or dimension that we use to characterize the organizational structure of public health delivery systems. So how do we apply this to looking at public health, again, local public health delivery systems in the U.S.? We assembled a national longitudinal data set by conducting two different waves of a survey of a representative sample of local public health systems across the U.S., first in 1998 and then again repeating that survey in 2006 so we could look at change. It was about a 20% sample of the nation's local public health agencies that were surveyed, and the instrument that we used was a variant of the Miller and Turnock instrument for measuring public health system capacity and performance, and included a series of questions that were basically designed to get at those core elements, those core dimensions of public health system organizational structure that we just talked about. First of all, asking about the availability of 20 core public health activities, whether or not they were performed within the local public health system, and that becomes our measure of diversification. Secondly, we asked about how much of the effort for performing those activities was contributed by the local governmental public health agency as contrasted with other organizations in the system. That becomes our measure of centralization. We also then asked again for each of those 20 activities the range of other organizations that were involved in contributing to the performance of that activity. That becomes our measure of integration, the breadth of other organizations involved. And finally, we also asked our respondents to rate the perceived effect, effectiveness of that of each of those 20 activities as performed in the local public health system, to give us a measure of perceived effectiveness or self-assessed effectiveness in performing those 20 core public health activities. So we have two points in time where we're able to look at these attributes, so we can assess changes in organizational structure and what the implications of that change may be between 98 and 2006. We also then link this survey with a variety of other data sources that tell us about community characteristics, health, community health outcomes, as well as more detail on the public health agency institutional characteristics. In terms of our analysis methods, we used, in order to identify a typology of public health system organizational structure, we used hierarchical cluster analysis to classify each of the local public health systems into discrete categories based on those structural attributes that we just talked about, and basically to sort public health systems around the country into relatively homogeneous groups based on their organizational and interorganizational structure. We then used and we classified those systems at both of those points in time, both in 98 and in 2006, in order so that we could note change in structure over time. We then used multivariate models, in particular multinomial Loggia estimation, to look at the factors that appear to associated with change in structural characteristics over time. And then also used fixed effects regression models to look at the association between structural change and change in performance and health outcomes. So this slide gives you our kind of first order results in terms of looking at the identified groupings of local public health systems based on their organizational structure. And you can see we found basically seven distinct groups of public health systems, local public health systems based on their organizational structure. And you can see across the bottom there where each of those seven groups or clusters measure up in terms of our three overarching dimensions of system structure: diversification, concentration, and integration. The first three of these clusters of local public health systems we call comprehensive because they all offer a very high degree of diversification, or another way of saying that is a very large large scope of the 20 public health activities were offered in all three of these clusters. But those first three clusters differed in the amount of integration or how many other organizations were involved in performing those activities. And they also differed a bit in the measure of concentration, which is the role that the governmental public health agency played within those systems. Clusters 4 and 5 we called conventional systems because they offered really a moderate scope of activity. They scored moderately on our dimension of diversification. But differed a bit in terms of the level of concentration or the role of the government agency within those systems. And then finally, the final two groups of local public health systems we classified as limited, again, based on their level of diversification or based on the scope of activity that they delivered to their populations. They delivered a relatively small share of those 20 public health activities. And varied a bit again in terms on that concentration measure. The role, the reliance on the governmental agency differed between clusters 6 and 7. So this is the overall typology that we identified through this analysis. And you can see there in the bar graph that there were some changes over time in the prevalence of these seven different types of public health systems between 98 and 2006. We saw some growth in cluster one of those comprehensive systems. We saw some sizable reductions in prevalence of cluster 5, which still, though, turned out to be our most prevalent or predominant type of local public health system, that conventional system with a relatively low level of concentration or low level of reliance on the governmental agency. So a fair amount of change over time in looking at the prevalence of these different types of structures. This next slide, I know, is a little complicated, a lot of numbers here, but this is another view into the nature of structural change, the degree and the direction of change that we saw in how local public health systems changed over that period of time in their organizational structure. And the columns across the top show you the cluster classification in 1998. And then the rows across the side here show you the cluster classifications in 2006, that second point of time. And so these numbers just represent probabilities or proportions, the likelihood of moving from one type of cluster to the next type of cluster. And the diagonal elements that are highlighted in red there show you the likelihood of stability, the likelihood of remaining in that same cluster between those two points in time. And so you can see cluster one turned out to be our most stable type of local public health system because 50% of the public health systems that were classified as a cluster one, a comprehensive system in 98, remained classified as a comprehensive system in 2006. That was the most stable cluster, with only 50% staying stable. The rest of the other 50% obviously moved into the other types of classifications that you see there, primarily moved down into clusters 5, 6, and 7. Some of the more moderate or limited public health systems. For the remainder of those clusters, you see actually the diagonal elements there, you see a pretty small transition probability numbers, meaning that it was fairly unlikely for those systems to remain in that with that particular type of organizational structure over this point in time. Most of the agencies that were classified as a cluster 2 or cluster 3 moved into some other type of organizational structure by 2006. And in fact, cluster 4, we really termed to be our really a transitive type of organizational structure because all the organizations that were classified as a cluster 4 in 98, all of them moved to some other type of arrangement in 2006. In fact, they either moved to a cluster 5 arrangement or a cluster 6 arrangement. So the takeaway message, big message from this transition probability slide is that there is a lot of structural fluidity over this period of time, 98 to 2006, and actually how local public health systems are organized, the breadth of the scope of services they provide, and the range of organizations that are contributing to those services within these systems. We were also interested in looking at what some of the determinants of that organizational change might be over this time period. And so this slide shows you results from our multinomial probit models, multinomial logit models that look at factors that predict organizational change across these different structural classifications. And as you can see here, population size and population growth over this time period was associated with an increase in the likelihood of a public health system moving into that to one of those first two clusters, one or two, one of those comprehensive types of public health systems. So if you experience an increase in population size over this time period, you were more likely to move into one of those cluster one and two comprehensive types of public health systems. Conversely, if you saw population decline over time, you were significantly more likely to end up migrating into a cluster four or five, one of those conventional types of public health systems. Similarly, community economic characteristics appeared predictive of structural change over this time period. If you saw a growth in the poverty rate or the percent of population below poverty in your community, you were less likely to move into one of those clusters one and two comprehensive systems, more likely to move into one of the clusters four or five more conventional public health systems. You can see some of the other characteristics that appear to be significant drivers of structural change in public health systems over time, including public health spending per capita, perhaps not surprisingly that being predictive of moving into one of the more comprehensive structural arrangements. And actual governing structures appear to be important here as well. Public health systems that actually are governed by a local board of health, more likely to move into that comprehensive structure, less likely to move into conventional or limited types of structural arrangements. We also thought it would be interesting to look at how the measures of self-rated practice effectiveness vary across these different types of organizational structures. Again, we included on the survey instrument a measure. We asked the local health officials that were respondents at both points in time to rate how well their public health system performed in performing each of those 20 public health activities. And this slide shows you an aggregate composite score on that practice effectiveness measure, mean score for each of the types of structural groupings that we identified in the typology. And as you can see here, there are significant differences. We see significant variation in self-assessed practice effectiveness across these different types of public health systems, with the highest scoring systems appear to be those most comprehensive systems, clusters one and two, followed by cluster three, which is also classified as one of our comprehensive systems. Interestingly, the lowest score on self-rated practice effectiveness is found in clusters four and five, those what we call the conventional public health systems. That's where we saw the lowest score, not in the most limited public health systems as you might expect. In clusters six and seven, we actually found significantly higher scores for practice effectiveness than we did in clusters four and five. And this obviously has piqued our interest in learning more about the mechanisms that might be driving these differences in practice effectiveness. This overall pattern of variation held up when we used multivariate estimates to control for differences in community characteristics across the different public health systems in our study. So after controlling for population size and density and age composition, poverty status, race, and also physician supply, we still found significant differences in this self-rated practice effectiveness score across the different types of public health systems. In this slide, we're using clusters one and two, those most comprehensive systems, as a reference point, and you can see all the other clusters here had significantly lower scores on practice effectiveness, even after controlling for these other community characteristics and health resources. And also, clusters four and five had the largest difference. Had the largest difference in practice effectiveness, the lowest scores on practice effectiveness when compared with the comprehensive systems, clusters one and two. So what do we learn from all of this? I think first and foremost, we do see that over this period of time, at least the period of time that we studied, 98 to 2006, we did see significant evidence of significant structural change among the nation's local public health systems. A lot of change, again, thinking back to that transition probability slide, a lot of movement across these different types of local public health systems. the general movement tended to be toward more diversified types of public health systems. Systems were becoming, were moving toward those categories that offered a broader scope of public health services. We also saw systems in general moving toward more integrated types of public health systems that involved a larger range of organizations in the delivery of public health services. We didn't see a lot of movement in terms of that our third dimension of concentration until we actually looked at some of the more specific measures of the specific types of public health activities being developed, and there we did see some evidence of movement toward more concentrated types of systems for policy development activities, meaning that systems are relying more on their governmental public health agencies for performing policy development activities as opposed to non-governmental organizations. We also found that population growth, public health spending, governance appear to be important drivers of the structural change, and these variables were among the strongest predictors of structural change or movement from one classification to another classification in our typology over this period of time. We also saw, perhaps not surprisingly, that the comprehensive systems reported larger improvements in practice effectiveness over time, and overall just larger scores on the self-rated practice effectiveness compared to the other types of systems. Also appeared that greater integration, systems that involved were more integrated with other organizations, also achieved higher performance levels on those scores. And then, again, interestingly, those conventional systems, those middle category systems, appeared to fare worse than both the comprehensive systems and the more limited systems in terms of that measure of practice effectiveness. This is, again, something that we've got more work on going now to try to uncover what's really behind that finding. In summary, I think this typology, this way of classifying systems may be useful for helping us identify meaningful differences and meaningful changes over time in both the structure and the process of delivering public health services within communities. There are likely to be a number of different applications for this type of typology, both on the research and the practice and policy world, particularly as we're moving toward quality improvement strategies for public health organizations. We're moving toward a need for performance measurement and benchmarking tools. Again, this typology is a way of classifying systems into homogeneous groups that can allow for apples-to-apples comparison, more meaningful comparison. May also have a role in the emerging accreditation movement for public health systems that also very strongly is going to need mechanisms for comparison and for assessing differences in structure and performance across systems. Thank you very much.